Hello, everybody. In this episode, we will be discussing the history behind the rise of body positivity, plastic surgery and body image, tips to develop self-acceptance, and we answer your questions on how to diet without developing an eating disorder. In The Fast and the Curious, we discuss opinions of those in the media claiming that body positivity is a scam.
Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome back to another episode. Hello, darling Amy.
Hello, Katniss.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm well, surviving the coronavirus.
No.
Have you done your shopping?
I actually have. I've been shopping till I've been dropping, really. Like, there's not a lot of people out there, so I'm just like...
Woo. Taking full advantage of it.
Taking full advantage, but safely. You know, I don't have any symptoms, so...
I can imagine you just... panic buying around the shops. Everyone's getting bread and toilet paper and you're like, kukai.
I have this favorite pasta. It's a protein pasta.
Venna, yes, I love that pasta.
It's gone. All pasta is gone.
Mm.
I think that's the real epidemic. Mm. Guys, we're facing a pasta shortage. In all seriousness, it's very anxiety provoking.
It's new. It's just something that none of us in our lifetime have really had to deal with, something of such big proportions before. Mm-hmm. Something that affects everybody at some level. You know, big sporting events getting cancelled, concerts, schools getting cancelled. We kind of have to work from home a lot of the time. Yeah, it is uncertain. And I think people are just kind of wading their way through and trying to figure out what to do. But it is an interesting climate at the moment.
Yeah, so to bring you a little bit of something unrelated to the coronavirus, because I know that everyone's socials and pretty much everything is just flooded with information on coronavirus and that kind of thing. So if you're wanting to escape...
we want to bring you a bit of fun.
Yeah.
A little bit of a feel-good episode.
Yeah, something a little bit different.
Yeah, we are talking all things body positivity and body acceptance today. This is something that has been requested a lot, and it is something that you guys definitely are really, really keen on hearing. But before we jump into that, Amy, I have to ask you, please tell me your pit and peak of the week.
So I will start off with my pit. Look, I'm not a huge fan of birds.
Mm-hmm.
And where I live, there's this man-made lake, like a really large body of water. And I like to go for walks around there. I can walk up to the shops and it's really peaceful and relaxing. So let me paint this picture.
It's very
for
picturesque
you.
Around there. It's
very picturesque. Super, super relaxing. You know, after a tough day at work, you're like, oh, I'll just go for a stroll around the water and up to the shops. And there's lots of little ducks that people feed. Mm. It's, you know, it's almost perfect. Until there are these three evil little geese. I'm not sure if anyone else has had a run-in with geese before, but let me tell you, it's a life or death experience if I've ever encountered one. So there are three of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Three. It's like a little army of geese just waiting for someone small and blonde to...
Vulnerable and fearful.
Step into their environment where they can pounce. And they don't just pounce. Let me tell you, they hiss,
squawk,
they put their little neck beaks down and they just run. They charge at you. It's like a bull but in duck form.
So you got chased by three geese.
I got chased by three geese, but it didn't happen quite as simple as that. Mm-hmm. So I saw these three geese and I thought, oh, wow, three geese. That's pretty cool. So I got my phone out and I was like, oh, I'll take a little Snapchat, pull a little Instagram up. It's very, you know, very cute, three little geese.
Chuck a filter on and you're good to go.
Valencia, got you, boo. So I'm, you know, trying to film, get the right angles, get the right lighting, really make these geese pop, you know, get their angles, do them justice. And the closer I got to them, the more I started to realize that this was no longer cute. This was no longer relaxing as the geese started to squawk and hiss at me. I then realized that it stopped being safe. I'd entered the danger zone. And now I started to panic because I was too close to be like,
oh my God,
oh, I can run away. But I also didn't get my Instagram or Snapchat. So I'm like,
nothing's more disappointing. Did you risk your life and go back
yes.
for some prime content?
Later with my boyfriend. for protection, but we both got chased then. So I got to this point where I was in their little zone, and they were like, oh, intruder, time to attack. So they did. They put their stupid little beak heads down, like down, and charge. So I panicked and I ran, but I didn't want to run because there were people around. So I did that like awkward Kath and Kim walk.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like you're trying to run but walk. So yeah. It's like your feet move really, really fast, but they skim the ground. So I was doing this awkward little run, like trying not to.
You probably look like you just needed to go to the bathroom real bad and you need to pee.
So that's my pit. Got chased by geese and it was utterly humiliating.
And so I just want to, you got bullied by three birds.
Yeah, I'd say.
How does that feel to be almost 27 into
intimidation tactics, verbal abuse maybe? The hissing was pretty bad.
It sounds like there is some trauma here, also you need to get a grip.
Pits, you know, I'm a survivor of a three geese attack, so, you know,
wow. Basically a hero. You are the hero of Norwest, and there needs to be a statue in your honour. Survived the great geese attack of 2020.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I am only human, but...
And probably with coronavirus, no one's going out, and you're probably still going out because you love a shop.
I do.
You're the only target that they have now.
It's true.
They are waiting for you.
They do. They do wait.
They can smell your fear.
They can, and they know me now. I feel like they know me. I feel like, you know, every time I walk up, oh, there they are. Oh, yeah. There she is. Yeah. Like, oh, Mexican standoff. Like, who's going to crack first? It's me. I'll run.
It's always you.
What about you, my lovely Katniss?
You haven't done your peak.
Yeah, my peak said I survived.
Oh, wow. Okay. Really? Scraping up the drinks.
Small
feats. No, I'm very impressed by that. Your pit is my peak, to be totally honest. I mean, I had a pretty good peak, but that fills me with so much joy. And it makes me so happy to hear that you are 27 years old and you're a professional and you are getting bullied consistently by three geese.
Thank you. I'm glad that we can turn negatives into positives on this channel.
Love the reframe. My pitch would be I have recently started getting into skincare.
Ooh.
Yes, I know. 28. I'm killing it. I've recently started looking after my skin, and this shit is expensive, and there's like a more than a one-step thing. So I'm probably...
I kind of just out of curiosity want to know, like, is it a six-step skin regime? Like, how many steps are we talking?
The one I'm currently that I've been put on. So the skin doctors have told me it is a
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So I have to do 5 different products on my face. Which is the most products I think my face have ever had.
Morning and night?
Morning and night. Plus, wow. I need to take supplements.
Wow.
Yeah. I literally would just wipe my face with a makeup-free wipe, or like wipe my makeup off and moisturize. Like, I thought that was it. But apparently my skin is lazy and it's really bad and I need to sort my life out pretty much.
Well, for the record, your skin is looking radiant and beautiful.
Thank you. It cost me $2,000, so it bloody better look beautiful.
Let's slide straight into today's episode on body positivity. So, Kat, what does body positivity mean to you?
For me, body positivity seems to be, you know, really misconstrued as this bubbly, beautiful, glamorous Instagram term where everybody loves everything about themselves every minute of the day until the end of time. But I think the body positivity movement really should be called the body acceptance movement, because I think that term really better captures the idea of body positivity and accepting your body. Acceptance implies that regardless of what your body shape is, what your skin color is, that you will accept your body any time of the day. And it's not just acceptance of your body in its current state. It's acceptance that you will have days that you don't feel so good. Mm. And you'll have days that you feel really crappy. And that's okay. And accepting that it's not always just beautiful, happiness 100% of the time.
It's not loving yourself.
No, it's accepting.
Every day, yeah.
It's on the bad days. It's accepting that you feel shit and acknowledging your self-talk and moving forward from it. I think for me, that's what body positivity is. I think it's, definitely a bit more of a realistic term. Mm. What do you think?
I love that. And I agree. I think that body positivity is on the edge of a brave new world where we're cultivating body acceptance. I feel like body positivity means different things for different people, but I think it is a more positive body image, regardless of societal and cultural views on the ideal shape, size, appearance, and so on. And I think it's about pretty much like what you said, promoting the acceptance of all bodies and helping people build confidence and acceptance of their own bodies by addressing the unrealistic beauty standards that we see on social media, in marketing, on TV, everything, shopping centers, public spaces. And I also think it's about recognizing that judgments aren't just based solely on our bodies. It's also race, gender, sexuality, disability, not just about whether you're fat or thin.
Yeah.
I think it goes so much deeper than that, and it's actually quite complex. I think body positivity is about encouraging people to have a better relationship with themselves.
Yeah. And I think that it's, as long as it's progress, then that's, for me as a clinician, that would be body positivity or body acceptance. Yeah. As long as there is some progress, it doesn't have to be loving yourself every single minute of the day, because to be honest, that's unrealistic. Even I think the most confident people have their days or weeks where they don't feel good about themselves. But I think, as you're saying, body acceptance is accepting that you'll have those days and moving on from it and really recognizing and tuning into how you talk to yourself.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's about accepting that your body will change naturally due to aging, that, you know, the, what time of your life you're at, and you don't need to fix or change anything that happens naturally. I think that's also a big part of body acceptance as well.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it really does come from the messages that we received in our life, messages that 100%. We weren't good enough, whether it's from the media, from parents, from partners, from friends, from anything. You know, looking back in my life, sometimes I remember so clearly the little comments that you get from people, and they're the ones that stick in my mind.
And isn't it funny how someone can just say one tiny little comment, one flippant comment that they wouldn't have thought 5 seconds about, and that one little thing can stick with you for a lifetime.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's those messages that you receive from people that maybe you look different to other people, or maybe that something's not good enough about you. And it's also the messages that the media sends us subliminally. So, you know, that they really do promote that real, I know in Western culture, it's that real tall, lean, fit body type. And that's almost also saying that anything other than that is not good enough. So I think that when we look at our body acceptance, and I know when we both are working with clients with this, we start to look at where those messages came from and how to undo some of those messages, because we do generally tend to believe that those messages are true. And when we actually start to unpack it with someone, you start to realize where they came from, and you start to really question their truthfulness, because a lot of people just take it as fact. Oh, well, I've always grown up and known that this body is perfect and I'm not good enough. And I think people just take that as gospel, and they don't really question it. They don't ever go back and question it. So I think it's really good to know, to start off with your body positivity, to know where those messages came from, and they're not always right or true.
Definitely. And I think that's important to have at the back of your mind as you're listening to this podcast, as we talk more a little bit about, you know, the history of body positivity and different trends and how that's changed, and also body image. Keeping in mind where your ideas of your own body, or where the messages and perceptions of your own body come from, as we talk more about this, I think it's really important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something that a lot of people don't really realize. I mean, they don't really question. It's just a subconscious acceptance that, yes, what the media is telling me, or what my parents have told me, or what I'm seeing around me is correct and I'm incorrect almost. But really going back and starting to question that. So I wanted to briefly talk about where body positivity came from. So body positivity gained momentum really in the 70s, because there was a development of a fat acceptance movement, or also known as fat activism, and then again in the 90s, and currently in 2020, I think it's been going for last 10 years, is the current wave. And this current body positive movement is initially focusing on challenging those unrealistic feminine beauty standards. So it's really geared towards females at the moment. But certainly, you know, males still will receive those messages, and there's been some new movements for men. But I think a lot of it is focused at empowering women as well. As the movement has grown in popularity over the last, 50 years now, the original focus on the acceptance of weight began to shift towards a message that, in fact, all bodies are beautiful. And I think also a really good thing to take note of here is the reason that the fat acceptance occurred was because there is actually current studies that do examine the discrimination that people who are maybe overweight or obese and the discrimination that they face on the daily. And I think that that's where really this started to come, because I think people who were not, in quotation marks, culturally attractive or normal or not the fit, they started to experience this real discrimination, whether it was really indirect discrimination or direct. And that, you know, can extend anywhere. So health, they're viewed as lazy, they're viewed as not good enough, they're viewed as not hard workers. And I think that's where that really started to come from, and where the momentum picked up with the body positivity movement.
Definitely. And I think what's interesting about the fat acceptance movement is that fat, when we talk about discrimination in that sense, like you mentioned, it's almost like fat is the worst thing a person can be.
I know.
Like, oh my God, they're fat. Like, and fat's also a synonym for ugly.
Is it?
Like, if so, yeah. Wow. If someone's fat, they're ugly.
Wow.
So I found that really interesting as well.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think it's...
Is that in dictionary? So if you search up the synonym of fat...
Yeah. If you type in fat, synonyms,
it relates
ugly,
to their appearance.
Unattractiveness. Yeah.
Wow. Isn't that just some indirect discrimination right there? That's almost actually direct discrimination.
If you're fat, therefore you are ugly.
It's institutionalized discrimination, isn't it?
So perceptions surrounding beauty and body types have varied significantly from Marilyn Monroe to Kate Moss and now Kim Kardashian. What is the ideal body type? If you ask someone in the 1900s, they would say beautiful women are desirably plump, full-figured with a clinched waist, aka the era of the corset, hourglass figure. If you go to beauty standards in the 1920s, it featured more of an androgynous look for women. They wore bras that flattened their chest and clothing that gave them a curveless look. They chopped their hair. Bobs were really in the 1920s, you know, kind of getting rid of that long, wavy hair, feminine hourglass look. It kind of flipped everything on its head. And then that didn't last long, because in the 1950s, curves, hourglass figure, large breasts, slim waist was back, the era of Marilyn Monroe. And then the 60s saw beauty ideals change again. It seemed to be that peace, love, and thin was the motto of the 60s, with more of like an adolescent physique being on trend in the 60s. The 80s was all about the supermodel, athletics, felt tall and toned. This period brought about an exercise craze phenomenon, with workout videos being on trend.
Like Jane Fonda.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that actually encouraged also a rise in anorexia, because people were so exercise crazed.
Mm.
And then the 90s. Trends go towards waifish, thin and translucent skin. Think model Kate Moss. She was the heroine of the decade of pale, withdrawn and super thin.
Keira Knightley.
Yes.
She was like the one you looked
up to. I loved her when I was little. I just thought she was so beautiful. Mm. Then we fast forward to the 2000s, where flat stomach, healthy skinny, large breasts and a big butt. Kim Kardashian is the poster of ideal beauty standards for the modern woman. Women are expected to be skinny, but not too skinny, with large breasts and a booty, all while maintaining a flat stomach.
Christ, we absolutely cannot keep up with that. And that's just in the Western world. In other cultures, it is so different.
So different.
I know in Indian cultures, it's really healthy to be a little bit overweight.
Mm-hmm.
In the Asian cultures, it's a lot, you know, it's more idealized to be quite up and down, to be quite shapeless, to
and
put
then
it bluntly.
If you look at African cultures, they really accentuate long necks and different things like that. I wanted to touch on men a little bit as well. So the ideal body image has gone through a whirlwind for men as well. If we look at ancient Greeks, they were very particular about their ideals of beauty. The ideal man was muscular and lean. And then if we go to the 18 and 1900s, where it was like the Gilded Age, that was the era where weight meant status. Mm. So fat men were in. It signified that you had plenty of money and you didn't need to do hard labor. A big belly was considered attractive in that sense.
And pale skin meant that you didn't go in the sun much. And that was, you know,
status and privilege. Yeah. And then only 15 years from the age of fat men's club, a slim, dashing figure was all the rage. And then we go to the 1980s. We saw men's perfect bodies in a completely different direction. The hard body was in. It was the Reagan era brought in a new wave of heightened masculinity where hitting the gym hard made you more of a man. Think Arnold Schwarzenegger. Pretty sure I pronounce that wrong every time.
That was right.
And then we had recently the dad bod. So the dad bod swooped in. And it meant that men had a softer look built upon the theory that once a man has found a mate and fathered a child, he doesn't need to worry about maintaining his sculpted physique. And surveys actually suggested that women prefer this body type as opposed to that shredded, really muscular look because they felt less insecure about their own bodies.
What do you think about the dad bod?
I actually like the dad bod for the same reason. Yeah. It puts less pressure on me to maintain a perfect body.
Yeah.
And I think what stands out for me the most is that there isn't a clear healthy benchmark in society for men to aspire to or to gauge what good self-esteem is regarding a body type. At one stage in any given decade, a completely different body type was idolized. Mm. I think this highlights body diversity and the whole notion of, you know, plus size movement or skin wafer thin movement or any other size being on trend.
And now it's Fitspo.
Yeah.
It's not that you've done anything wrong. You just belong in the wrong century.
Yeah.
And the wrong country. but Fitspo and athleticism, I've really noticed that that's become quite deified, and that's what people maybe are working towards as well, that real fit, athletic,
healthy thin.
Yeah, healthy thin. God, I mean, you just can't get it right.
Like, don't be skinny fat. You've got to be healthy thin.
You've got to, and you need to have a little bit of muscle, but not too much that you don't intimidate others.
But not fat.
Yeah.
You know, like a booty, but like
in the right places.
In the right places.
So if you can just tell that fat to move itself, that would be great.
Fun fact, the more we are exposed to body diversity, the more we tolerate, accept, and even prefer different body types. What are your thoughts on different body types, Katniss?
You know that I love evolutionary theory and I love talking about our early ancestors. Variety is key. I think different body types for survival, it's really key and it's important, and it means that there's varied species and varied genetics, which equals a stronger chance of survival. And to be honest, in the modern day, I think it's wonderful. I have seen clients who have expressed that seeing different body types, different skin colors, different heights, different, you know, what are those body types? There's endomorph, ectomorphs, all of those things. Mm. Seeing a lot more.
Mesomorph.
Yeah, seeing a lot more of the presentation of that in the media, a lot more representative of normal. I mean, I wouldn't say it's completely representative of the normal population. I think it's still got a bit to work towards. But I think that having the different body types out there, I think it's wonderful. I think it's really, really good for consumers to see, because that becomes almost a new normal.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think it's a really wonderful thing to see out in the media.
Mm. And what do you think of plastic surgery or cosmetic procedures? Do you think they hinder or help body acceptance?
Girl, you are on the hard questions today. Look, I think you and I have different opinions of this.
I think we're on the same page, but we have, yeah, you're right. We have a little bit of differing perspective, which I think is great for podcasts.
No, for me, to be completely honest with you, I think that if it is something that you have thought about for a long time, or if it's something of your body that you are not completely happy with, I've seen the beneficial after effects of getting cosmetic or plastic surgery and how much that can increase confidence. And for me also, I notice with my clients that if they do get cosmetic surgery or plastic surgery, their life changes in a way because they want to maintain their confidence, and so they'll actually engage in healthier behaviors. So they'll start to eat better because they feel more confident. So isn't that interesting? It took a change in their appearance and then they started the healthier behaviors. They start to look after themselves better because that comes with a bit of confidence as well. So I know there's two sides to this, but I'm really for plastic or cosmetic surgery as long as there is a appropriate psychological and psychiatric screeners beforehand and it's not impulsive or it's not something that you think is going to make your life 10 times better.
I don't disagree with that. I think I'm all for plastic surgery and cosmetic procedures if it gives you better quality of life. I agree that you need to assess psychological and emotional well-being first and make sure you're doing it for the right reasons, not, you know, to be more attractive for someone else or if you do have unrealistic expectations about what having that procedure is going to mean for you. I think, yeah, by all means, go for it. If it's going to give you more confidence and better quality of life, then 100% not against having plastic surgery. My gripe with cosmetic procedures is that I feel like society has constructed this belief or message to young people that aging is unattractive and that aging is associated with unwelcome change or unwelcome physical appearance, such as sagging skin and wrinkles and that kind of thing. And I think I read several interview-based qualitative studies, and that illustrated the complicated, contradictory nature of women in particular's experiences of aging and body image. And it's contradictory because with aging, our physical appearance changes, but at the same time, we become more appreciative of physical health and more rejecting of societal pressures. So I just think with society placing such an emphasis on slowing down aging, so younger women, you know, in their really early 20s are getting Botox and anti-wrinkle injections and fillers. And I just feel like it makes me question, are we losing sight that aging is a privilege? Like if aging, you know that saying, and I thought about this when we were doing this podcast, sayings like, oh, she's aged well. And we look at that in terms of like, what does it mean to age well? Our skin's defied like, gravity appearance? And we have a few less wrinkles.
Yeah.
Like for me, aging well means you've lived a full, healthy life free of disease, and, you know, you've got a loving family and you've had amazing experiences and you've got great memories. And I just think life and living a full life is precious, and by no means am I against procedures, but I just think it's important to challenge these messages that society tells us. And if the worst thing that's happening to you right now is that you're aging, like really, what have you got to fix? What have you got to change?
Yeah.
And I think that perspective gets lost a lot when we just focus on the appearance, the physical things.
I agree. And some people would do anything to age. Some people don't have the privilege of aging. Some people are taken quite early, or some people are taken a little bit later in terms of they've passed away. And I think that, you know, some people would love to be on the earth and they would love to age and create those memories. So I think you're absolutely right there. But it is certainly such a tricky thing when we talk about body positivity, because can body empowerment and body acceptance and plastic and cosmetic surgery, can they coexist? I mean, is it?
Yeah, I definitely think they 100% can. I mean, my mum had more reconstructive type plastic surgery. She went through a pretty invasive operation where they cut like from her chest to her pelvis, and her body was left mutilated after that experience. And she had a tummy tuck and a few other things done, and like you said, completely transformed her life, gave her confidence that she never thought she would have again, and she was able to do things that she wasn't able to do with her previous body.
Yeah.
She also got breast implants, which boosted her self-esteem after feeding two children. And like, I've definitely seen the positives, and I definitely think there is a time and a place for plastic surgery, but I just think other things as well should be considered.
Absolutely. And I think that, yeah, having those psychiatric and psychological screeners to screen for, you know, this is something that is actually quite common, that there is an increase for plastic surgeons and cosmetic surgeons to start to introduce screeners to make sure that the client doesn't have an eating disorder or body dysmorphic disorder. So I quickly wanted to touch on body dysmorphic disorder because it ties in quite closely with body positivity. I mean, it is something that is actually unfortunately quite normal. It affects 2.7% of the population. So that's pretty much a little bit over 1 in 50. And it's extremely, extremely common. I was saying the AIMS off mic when I was reading through the diagnostic criteria again. A lot of the criteria fit a lot of people that I know, whether it's clients or friends, and, you know, even myself at one stage of my life. Hating our body is actually quite normalized in our culture and in this current society. I mean, it's quite normal to talk to your girlfriends and say, oh, I hate my legs, or oh, I look so gross today. And your girlfriend or friend might say, oh yeah, me too, I hate this bit about
it's
yourself.
Like, we bond over
you bond
it.
Like, over hating,
oh my
your
God,
body,
you hate your legs, I hate my legs
yeah,
too.
And it's almost like this shared, I don't know, this shared hatred of your body. And
well, we can relate to it.
Exactly. Mm. It's something that, you know, you do have a connection and a similarity with a friend, but at the same time, it becomes quite normal when you talk about that much. So hating your body becomes normalized. And I think
it's
that we
expected, isn't it? Yeah. Especially for women, it's like when someone speaks positive about their body, it's like, oh my God, you go, girl. Like,
or you're so up yourself. Yeah. You're so arrogant. Why would you say that about your body? Like, no, you need to hate your
body. Or it makes you feel uncomfortable. Like, oh wow, like they're so confident within their own. You know what I mean? Or, you know what I just thought of, you know, and I've been in situations where I've been in social settings and someone overweight has worn a revealing outfit and someone has been like, oh, she's brave.
Yeah. I mean, is that brave or is she just living her goddamn life?
She's just comfortable in her own skin.
Yeah, and that's not that they're brave. It's just they want to wear what they want to wear. Mm. And it's not us to decide that it's brave or not.
Mm.
I mean, if it was anyone else, that wouldn't even be a question.
Yeah, but I think that comes back to, as well, like body positivity, seeing different types of bodies in outfits that we would categorize for a specific or ideal body type.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. It can definitely blow the lines. We know when you do see someone like that, don't say that's brave. Just think, yeah, cool. That's awesome. It's not even
get
worth
a girl.
Yeah. So body dysmorphic disorder, it's sometimes classed as an invisible disorder just because of the private and social phobic nature of body dysmorphic disorder sufferers. And a lot of the time when we hate a part of our body, we generally do hide it and we don't really talk about it with therapists or with people that can help us. We will talk about it with friends, but sometimes friends, if they have got their own stuff going on, they might not realize how serious it is. So it is something that is certainly an invisible disorder, and I think that it can affect all parts of your life. I remember when I hated parts of my body, it was quite common that I would think, oh, I don't want to leave the house today, or I don't want to wear that because I just hate that part of my body. And I think that that's such a normal feeling that so many people have, men and women, at any age. And I think that's why this does go under the radar, because we don't generally talk about this to our doctor. We don't generally talk about it to anyone, a health professional, because we are maybe – it does have feelings of shame or guilt. And I just did want to really quickly bring this up because it is something that, you know, if you think that you are suffering from body dysmorphic disorder, please go and see someone. I don't want to read out the criteria at the moment, but I think you can Google it online, or please go and see if it's something that's impacting your life. If you hate a body part so much, or hate something about you so much and it's impacting on your ability to go to work or to study or to see friends or to have an open relationship with your partner, then that is certainly something that is quite concerning. And I think that's where we would start to maybe be a bit concerned as clinicians.
Yeah. And I think with BDD, I think what differs BDD from what might be normal insecurity is that it could be an imagined physical flaw that rules your life, and it's a continued obsession with one or more parts of your body causing that severe distress that interferes with daily functioning. So to others, it might be a non-existent or barely visible flaw.
It's just exaggerated.
Yeah. And I think what one of the common characteristics is that compulsive or repetitive behavior, such as excessive grooming or attempting to hide the flaw with cosmetics and seeking, you know, surgery or other physical alterations, and that won't actually provide relief if you're suffering from BDD.
Absolutely, because they're often with BDD, if there is a part of their body that maybe that they want to improve, and maybe they do, whether it's through surgery if it just goes away or something, that generally there will be another body part that comes up. So it's really, really tricky with BDD, and really important that if you are someone who thinks that you maybe have that fixation and repetitive, you know,
behavior,
that's when you do need to start to see someone. And it is
and the reason why you should get psychological help, so professional intervention, is because BDD is often a perceptual defense that guards people against feeling their most vulnerable and anxiety-provoking emotions. So it's actually got a lot more to do with psychology.
Absolutely.
And a lot less to do with body image.
Yeah, it's really a lot to do with those automatic negative thoughts and those messages you've received. And also self-harm is something that is incredibly common with BDD, or sometimes even just low self-esteem, even if you're not diagnosed, because generally when we have a body part, we might want to get rid of it. And self-harm, I've seen a lot of clients who've self-harm parts of their body that they weren't happy with because as an attempt to get rid of it or to feel some kind of pain.
Extreme measures,
or
yeah.
It's also been used as a punishment. Mm. Like, my body's so gross and ugly, I'm going to harm myself and punish it almost. So that's also really common as well. And that can be quite a hidden thing that can happen in the privacy of people's homes. So really important that, you know, we do get that help. And, you know, if you need, because it's really serious. Body negativity and low self-esteem can certainly snowball quite quickly into quite a dark place with BDD or even any other eating disorders. It's not just limited to BDD. Mm. Low self-esteem and low body confidence can often go hand in hand with anorexia, bulimia as well. So we really important that you do acknowledge that and, yeah, acknowledge your cognitions around your body.
Definitely. And we can go from feeling slightly annoyed by a small imperfection to developing an obsession with a body part that intrudes on every single waking moment, which is why I wanted to discuss body image just briefly. So what do you see when you look in the mirror? Most people see at least one part of their physical appearance that they aren't fond of. Body image refers to a person's subjective perception of their own body, and it encompasses memories, assumptions, and generalizations in relation to how we feel about our size, shape, height, and weight. Research suggests that having a negative body image is associated with an increased risk of depression, anxiety, and eating disorders. Personality traits such as perfectionism and self-criticism can also influence developing a negative body image. So I feel like that's important to note as well. But it's clear that the most important relationship we have in our lives is the one we have in ourselves. Yet we are not taught how to look after ourselves to enrich our self-esteem and our sense of self.
Mm.
When you were little, did anyone ever teach you how to care for your relationship with your body?
Or it was always like, be kind to others, treat others how you would like to be treated. But no one ever says, be kind to yourself.
Yeah.
Look after yourself. It's always serving others rather than, you know, I never got messages as a child to, you know, look after yourself or care for yourself or talk to yourself in a really nice way. It was never about that.
Like we said, it was normalized to have insecurities. It was normalized. So, for example, how many times have you blamed your body? That guy didn't call me back because I don't look as skinny in real life as I do on Instagram.
Mm.
Or maybe I'd get more likes if I had a six pack. Damn you, choc chip cookies. Body image can affect anyone at any time, and we often associate negative body image with teenage girls.
Mm.
And like Kat and I said, we kind of bond over our insecurities. Yeah. We bond over hating our bodies.
It's become normal to hate your body.
Yeah. And it's been suggested that pressure to conform to the body is higher for women than in men, because women are more frequently confronted with ideal bodies in the media, and because in Western societies, beauty is more essential to the feminine than it is to the masculine gender role. But while the standards for female body ideals seem to be depicted clearer, and I think that's the real difference here, women's body ideals are clearer. The media also has a lot to answer for when it comes to how it affects men. The silver screen has set a bar with the superhero effect, which is this unrealistic standard of hypermasculinity for men. These bodies are only attainable for a small number of people, yet they're associated with the idea of what it means to be a man.
Mm.
So, for example, like you look at Superman and Spider-Man and Thor, like Chris Hemsworth, like all these people that we see in movies, like Zac Efron, like it's almost like to be in a movie, to play any kind of male character, you have to look like this. This is what it means to be masculine.
Mm.
So when another man looks at another man, there is still that comparison. And often feeding the rise of muscle dysphoria or bigorexia, a disorder that mainly affects men, is an obsession with feeling too small and underdeveloped. Mm. And that's where we see the rise of anabolic steroids and extreme exercise and diet used to bulk up and become massive to this unrealistic, unnatural proportion. The idea of being better than the average really appeals to the male psyche. And it's that theory of the better you look, the more successful you'll be.
Mm.
So the better girl you'll get. the better job you get, the more respect you get from your peers.
Yeah.
It's that bigger is better mentality.
Yeah. And I think also I wanted to quickly, just going on that with that perception that they are better and a better body equals more success, I know I touched briefly on the discrimination that people do tend to get when they do have a body that's not culturally acceptable or the prestigious body. There was a study done and they wanted to, I guess, see where this discrimination came from. And they got two groups, a group of quite attractive, well, culturally attractive participants and a group of, you know, maybe average looking or culturally unattractive looking participants. And actually the group that were classed as the unattractive participants actually had a lot more experience in these fields of work than the attractive participants. And they submitted their resumes with a photo for both the attractive and non-attractive groups. And the group that was classed as more attractive, they actually got more callbacks for an interview, even though they had less experience on their resume. And researchers were like, well, obviously there is that discrimination, that indirect subliminal discrimination, because even though they didn't have as much experience, because they were attractive, you know, maybe when you look at the attractive person, you do want to be, I guess, around them, or you do want them to be in your company, I guess, because it, you know, people like to look at pretty people. And so I wonder, yeah, it was really interesting, that study, that it really just goes to show how much discrimination there is, whether, and it's unconscious discrimination as well.
Because we're constantly sent that message that the better you look, the more successful you'll be.
Exactly.
Or the more liked you are. And just like women, male body image is complex. Men are focusing on hair loss, receding hairlines, height perception. The hair loss industry alone is estimated to be worth $1.5 billion. And research has found that hair loss is linked to feelings of inadequacy, depression, stress, low self-esteem. And research indicates that people associated taller men with higher levels of charisma, education, leadership, increased career success, health, and a more robust dating life.
Wow.
Yeah, just because they were taller.
Wow. Do you know, Ames, I was thinking when I was doing research for this, do you remember when we were growing up, I guess the female figures that we looked up to or that were exposed to us in the media who were overweight? Mm-hmm. So I noticed that the female figures that were overweight, there weren't many who that were constantly shown on the TV or in media or anything like that, in magazines. They were either comedians, they were either athletes or they were either singers. So you had your Venus Williams. So she's not the quote, perfect body, but she was an athlete. So it's almost like, yes, you're allowed to be a bigger woman or a woman that looks different as long as you've got something else to compensate. Mm. And there was never really a woman in the spotlight that was just her. And isn't that interesting? So you were allowed to be bigger, but you need to compensate and have something else that added value to your image. So that, I think that was really interesting when I was thinking back. I was like, I think
that's
remember.
Interesting too. And bigger models as well.
Yeah.
When they'd have bigger models, it was always a plus size model, and plus size indicating that they were the normalized or the idealized size plus. So they're still not normal. Like they're still not ideal.
And they're not called models. They're not just called normal models. No, they have to be called plus size
models. So the emphasis is on their size still. So it's not really normalizing body diversity or cultivating acceptance because we're still saying these women are beautiful, but only in the plus size category. They're not just beautiful because
they're beautiful.
We have an acceptance for all bodies.
They're only beautiful in this one category. We're only allowing them to be beautiful because they fit into this specific category.
Yeah. I feel like body image can be a problematic issue for men and women. And in modern society, we are all susceptible to negative body image. It's not a woman thing. It's a human thing. We all go through bad body image days. We all have those days where we look in the mirror and hate what we see. And I feel like with the rise of social media, we literally have a weapon of self-esteem mass destruction on hand 24/7. Social media is this curated, filtered, airbrushed, angled, edited illusion. And that's why we need to be taught how to care for ourselves. We need to be taught about how to have a healthy relationship with our body, because these seeds start young. And if we don't have these conversations, like I know for men, stoicism is a huge part of why we don't have open conversations around male body image issues, and they're just as prevalent as women.
Absolutely.
So I think these conversations are really important for, you know, increasing self-acceptance and gaining body
You have a real struggle with
I
that.
I do. I don't know why I can't say it, but our bodies are not meant to be flawless. And this is where insecurities cultivate, because from a young age, we're conditioned to believe that to be loved, to be successful, to be respected, we have to be attractive. And we learn that imperfections either need to be covered up, changed, edited out, or fixed.
And also, who made the rules on what an imperfection is? Like, who suddenly said acne is an imperfection, or who suddenly said a bit of fat? How is that an imperfection? Is
and
that
who
just
makes
not
up all these trends?
I know. Businesses, capitalism, baby.
Oh my goodness.
We are absolutely anxious products of our capitalist society, because they do profit off our anxiety and they low self-esteem.
Imagine how many companies would go broke if we decided to be happy with how we looked.
A lot of them.
Kat, what are your tips and strategies to increase self-acceptance?
Well, obviously I could go on for days, but I did really want to quickly touch on before I go into tips.
Oh, yes.
It does tie in really well, but as Ames was saying, as infants, as babies, we were not born with body image issues. We really just had a neutral and actually quite a factual understanding of our bodies. So, for example, if we're 3 or 4 or 5, we had toes, we had legs, we had a tummy, we had a face, and we didn't have really any outside information to tell us any different. They were just our arms, they were just our legs, that was just our tummy. It was just that. That was it. But as we got older, when we start to compare and consume media, then we start to decide that these messages we're getting are actually true, and that we're different to those messages we're getting. And suddenly we start to compare our body and realize that we are not like the messages or the beautiful images that we are starting to consume. And therefore there's something wrong with us. There's something wrong with us, because that you don't see your own body getting advertise. So we look at our own body and this kind of can happen in primary school.
When do you think the first time you noticed your body was different?
To be honest, I think it was quite young for me. And I look back at it with a bit of sadness, because I was so young. To be honest, mine was about age 7, and I started to notice that I always had quite tall, slim, athletic friends, kind of like how you were as a child, quite skinny, just wasn't even worried about their body. And I always had quite an athletic build and a little pot belly, as 7-year-olds do. And I started to notice that I wasn't like my friends, that I was smaller, I had broader shoulders, and I had dark hair. And I always used to think I had funny eyes. So I started to really compare myself to my friends, and I started to notice what was on the TV was probably correct. It was the Britney Spears, it was the Spice Girls, and they were all beautiful and stunning, and you know, magazines and things like that that I read that were my mom's or something like that. So I started to really think, wow, these people that I'm seeing, that must be what I should be looking like, because if I'm seeing them so much, that must be what the normal is. And this is me, age 7. So I started to really start to notice my body and think, an arm is not just an arm, it's a fat arm. A tummy is not just a tummy anymore, it's either a fat or a skinny tummy. So I started to have those real associations with good or bad. What about you? When did you start to notice?
I had a completely different relationship with body image. I think I was definitely aware of my body in high school. I think around, you know, 11 and 12, I kind of became more aware of what my body looked like in comparison to other bodies, but I didn't really develop any, I would say, true insecurities until mid-20s, because my body changed a lot more in mid-20s than what it ever did. I was always really athletic, really lucky. I was skinny all throughout high school, never really had to think about gaining weight or any of that type of thing. I mean, I still had bad body image days. I was probably more self-conscious of my skin. I suffered acne during high school, and that was my big insecurity. But it wasn't till mid-20s when my body really started to develop into more of a womanly figure. I started putting on fat in places I never had fat, and I just started to feel a lot bigger than I ever had. I also got into weight training, so I was putting on muscle, and my body changed significantly from, I'd say, 23 to 25. And for me, that was when I really started to be conscious of my body.
And did you ever, when you were a child or a teenager, ever I used to do this all the time, you'd ever have like this like motivational picture of someone who was absolutely not my body type and put it on the mirror and think, or as your wallpaper on your phone and think, yes, that's who I want to be.
100%.
And that age, you don't, I guess maybe you don't have the education or the knowledge to know that actually it's impossible to be that body type.
Mm. For me, it was particular body parts. So I was a late developer. I had a pretty flat chest throughout high school. So I used to really want a boob job. Mm. And I used to look at women that had, you know, really busty chests and be like, yep, I want boobs like that.
And it's always the extreme. Mm. Like if you don't have something, you want it times 10.
Yeah.
You want it to be like for me, I was like, oh my God, I want a six pack. Even though that's almost impossible for me. Like you want just, you don't just want like, oh, just a little bit different. You almost want that extreme difference, don't you? So for you, it was like, I want big boobs. I want to be big and bust, not just like, oh, just a little bit. Like you always go to kind of that, almost like the black and white.
Yeah. Thinking. When I was in high school, I used to fill water balloons up and stick them in my bra. I'd just be like, oh, this was what it would be like if I had boobs.
Oh my God. Imagine you got a boob job that big at such a young age.
I'd just be boobs.
Yeah. Because you're so little. It'd just be like a stick with boobs. Okay. So going into some strategies. So there are a few. I want to go into the cognitive strategy. So I do, obviously, as a psych, I have cognitive and behavioral strategies. So as I was saying, when we were children, we start to conflate and confuse what is normal and what is acceptable and what is worthy. So for body acceptance to occur, we actually must relearn our extremely, extremely unconscious thoughts and processes about our body. So when you look in the mirror and you see a body part you hate, this is what I get a lot of my clients do, is I want you to rethink how you talk to yourself. I think our automatic negative thoughts, we don't notice them a lot of the time. They're there, but we don't actually tune into them. So you might look in the mirror and absolutely unconsciously think, fuck, I hate how I look today. Mm. And you're not even noticing that you're saying that. And when I get clients to do this, I get them to be really, really tuned in to how their negative talk is. And it's amazing that they don't realize how much negative talk they are saying to themselves, absolutely unconsciously. Mm. So it's really important that you start to tune into that. And if you're someone who doesn't really know how to do that, start to look in the mirror and write down all of your thoughts. They can be as silly as you want. It doesn't even have to be with your body, but just do like, I call it a thought download. Every thought you have on a piece of paper, write it down. You'll start to realize I have so many thoughts about my body that I wasn't even consciously aware of. So instead of saying, I hate my fat thighs, what is really, really helpful is to take this back to a neutral. So it's not going straight into a positive, because you have to believe it for it to work. So this is really important if you have a really long-standing hatred towards a body part. So you could say, instead of saying I have fat thighs, I really, really, really promote saying, no, I have thighs. Making it back to that factual and almost scientific view neutral of your body. Yeah, that neutral. And then, you know, you need to just describe your body parts very factually without any emotion. So separate yourself from your thoughts, which you think is the real world. And remember that all judgments about your body are just thought errors, and that we have just unfortunately continued to believe as fact until now. So this is when you need to really, really notice the messages you received and question whether they were true. Because if someone's telling you that you need to be a different person or you need to look better, you don't automatically have to accept that as truth. So if that is also something that you struggle with, is even taking it back to neutral, for some clients who do struggle, you could say, okay, I have a thigh bone, and around my thigh bone there's tissue, and then on top of it there's skin. So see how that's so factual? And it's true. I mean, we want to say things to ourselves that are true, otherwise it won't work. So we need to strip back all the socially constructed bullshit we've misinterpreted as correct. Nobody actually has ugly, disgusting thighs, because that's honestly just an opinion. What is fact, though, is that you might have more tissue around your thighs than what other people have. It doesn't necessarily mean there's something wrong with you. It just means that everybody is different. When you say things to yourself without emotion and as purely factual, scientific statements, our brain starts to realign and sees these statements as factual and neutral. So the more you say these thoughts to yourself, the more your brain will start to be like, oh, okay, cool, we're changing speed here. We're actually going to change the way we talk to ourselves. And your brain will actually start to have those subliminal unconscious thoughts as well. You just need to practice it. Your brain's like a little toddler. It does what it's really good at until you tell it no, until you actually tune in and say, we're going to actually change the way I talk to myself. So the more you practice it to yourself, the more your brain, it becomes quite automatic. There's no hate, there's no love, it's just your brain processing your thighs. And I think it's really important to practice doing this for all your body parts. Have you ever looked in the mirror, Ames, and had any body neutrality statements or looked and tried to practice the neutral side of your body?
Yeah, definitely. And this is something I do with clients as well. So I like to focus on the function that body part does. So yeah. I have legs and they enable me to walk, run, perform exercises, drive my car. So I focus on statements that are true and neutral as well, but I also like to look at what my body does in terms of function, not what it does in terms of appearance. Mm. So whether my thighs are fat or not, they still allow me to walk. Whether, you know, I have legs that allow me to do all these amazing things, the fact that whether I think they're fat or not doesn't stop me from doing those things.
And doesn't change the fact of what they've done for you.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that's really important. Yeah, the function is really can just readjust the way you look at your body. Because yeah, when you definitely. Start to think of all the amazing things your body has done for you.
You develop an appreciation.
You do. And you almost develop like a guilt for treating it so badly. I certainly have. I'm like, I'm sorry. another thing I wanted to bring up was your assumption. So this is really going back to how you received messages when you were younger or what messages you received to make you hate your body. So you know, I will ask clients, identify the appearance assumption that you'd like to change. They might say, oh, I've got really fat thighs. And I might ask them, well, where did this come from? What makes you think that you've got fat thighs? Like who told you that? Or how, like, did you receive that from the media? And why is this assumption still here? Because a lot of the time when we really strip it back, clients will say, oh, I guess I got it from my mom, but it probably wasn't true because it was probably her projecting her own body image issues onto me. So that means it's not true. And I will say, well, why is it still here? Why do you still have this body assumption? And they might say, I don't know. Like it almost because unless you bring it up and really tune in, you don't know why you have these assumptions. And then I might say, well, what impact does you thinking you've got fat thighs have in your life? And a lot of clients will say, well, it stops me from going out. It stops me from enjoying activities. I know for me personally, I have certainly stopped myself from doing a lot of things, going out to dinners, just because I thought, oh, if I go out, I know I'll probably eat too much and it won't be. And that was social events and fun that I was missing out on. So it can have a really big impact on your life. And having that assumption can hold so much power over people without them even realizing. And in what ways is this assumption of your fat thighs unreasonable, unrealistic, or unhelpful? I can probably guarantee that it's all of those things. And I guess changing the assumption. So what could be a more balanced and flexible assumption? So as I said, going back to the neutral statements, I have thighs. That's balanced. It's factual and it's, you know, it's true. And then really getting clients to practice the neutral statements. And then eventually, as that becomes automatic, I would certainly encourage them to practice the positive statements. But I think it's small steps for body acceptance because you need that neutral before you can go into the positive. Okay, so going to the behavioral side of stuff, I know this is taking a while, but I really wanted to hone this in for you guys because I know so many people do struggle with body negativity, low self-esteem. Okay, I've actually got some fun ones. One that I find so important that so many people don't do is taking the time to make yourself feel good. So take time in the morning to plan a really good outfit. Wear matching lingerie, wear your good socks, wear your good perfume. Do you ever like have good perfumes, Ames, or good makeup that you don't use because it's like for special occasions? Do you ever have those?
I definitely have good perfumes for special occasions.
Yeah. Like I've got like my work makeup and I'm like, why do I do that? Like I because when I got work makeup on, I'm like, oh, it looks so basic. But when I have started to use the good stuff, I'm like, I feel so good. Like it just, I feel like we generally.
And that kind of sends yourself a message that
you're not worthy.
You're only worthy of wearing the good, you know, quotations, makeup on a special occasion.
Exactly.
When you
look better.
Yeah. Whereas every day should be, we should feel special every day. We should love ourselves or like practice self-love every day. So that's wearing the quotation good makeup or spraying the good perfume every day because we're not just worth it on special occasions.
Exactly.
We're worth it every day.
I agree. So take the time to do the little things that make you feel good. So taking a long, nice shower, putting on some music, taking a bath, taking the time to reconnect with your body. Often when you hate your body, there's a bit of disconnect with your body. You feel like it's not your own, or you feel like it's not good enough, and so you almost hate your body. Taking the time to reconnect with your body. So I know you brought this up in one of your previous EPS aims, but taking the time to moisturize and feel it on your body. Use a good moisturizer. Use your best moisturizer. And taking the time, use your good makeup. Like, those things actually have been scientifically proven to make you feel better. And even on a Monday or a Tuesday or a Wednesday, there is no good or bad time. I think if it makes you feel good, then that is absolutely really good. So really important one. Also, going back to wearing perfume or cologne, there was a study published that found that men who use cologne actually reported an increase in self-confidence and perceived attractiveness. So just from wearing perfume, participants felt more confident and they felt more attractive. Another one I have is, and I say this all the time, is exercise. I don't need to go into it because obviously you know that exercise can increase your self-esteem. It's got those really feel-good neurotransmitters and chemicals.
Endorphins, yay.
Yay.
Endorphins make you happy, and happy people don't kill their husbands.
They do. Almost the time. All right, this is a really cool one. Help others. So studies have found that the pleasure you receive from helping others actually helps to increase your own self-esteem and your own perceived attractiveness. So when you help other people, there comes an increase in self-compassion, and that can actually make you see yourself in a better light. That real, I know when I help people, you do feel good, don't you? You do have that real, yeah, warmth. It's very wholesome.
And that was one of the things that I had listed down for like one of my, I guess, practices, or, you know, when we have bad body image days and how we overcome them, is I really love to give compliments. I love to compliment people that are around me, whether they're my friends or colleagues or whoever. And I think building like a circle that is really uplifting and where you know, build up your friends and not only compliment them on their appearance, but give them compliments like, you're so creative, you're so intelligent,
their personality,
you're such a good listener, I love how passionate you are about your work, or I admire your kindness. Those types of things, like building a really positive circle, I think is so important. And when you can do that for someone else, it definitely makes you feel better as well.
Because absolutely,
I feel like it's the connection.
And I think that, yeah, going back to complimenting people on their personality and their strengths, because that starts to decrease the importance of appearance and starts to increase the importance of them and their strengths and what they're good at and their personality. Because, you know, I think if you constantly are complimenting someone on their appearance, that's really lovely. But at the same time, you know, this is a classic example when you say, oh, wow, have you lost weight? Actually, what that can do for someone is to think, oh, okay, well, I am getting a lot of compliments for losing weight. I'm going to keep doing it. Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of people do suffer disordered eating, so they're getting rewarded for having disordered eating. So really watch your compliments and really start to compliment others on more than just their appearance, because that obviously makes you feel good, and you never know what's going on in their life. It can often really help them as well.
Another thing that can feed into negative body image that I just wanted to touch on is trauma. I know I always bring up trauma, but feelings of insufficiency, inadequacy, or not feeling loved or cared for when you were younger, those messages can feed into negative body image and negative self-image. And, you know, like I talked about before, negative self-image can have various emotional layers that need to be addressed. So like Kat said, when you're doing your thought download, and you might start to get flashbacks or memories or have associated memories or assumptions about where those body image messages came from, or feelings of inadequacy or not feeling worthy. When those feelings start to arise, that's when I think it would be important to seek professional help or therapeutic intervention.
Yeah, and going back to our parents, how your parents spoke to themselves is probably a good indicator of how you talk to yourself. So if you're, I know, like a classic example is that mums who weren't happy with their body, especially following pregnancy. I know for me, my mum was always exercising, always eating perfect, amazing, yummy, healthy foods, and that was awesome. But at the same time, I received messages when I was younger that in order to be loved or in order to be worthy, I need to also worry about my body and my health. So really looking at the messages you receive from your parents, because so often we trust our parents a lot, right? We think for most of us, whatever they say, we would blindly trust. But there are a lot of times when the messages they gave you, even though it wasn't direct and it wasn't malicious, we have subconsciously started to see that as fact. So really watching how your parents thought about their own body and how quickly that can cascade into your own self-thoughts is really important as well. Okay, this is actually a really cool one. All right, I think this is really important as well. Watching your posture and body language. So there was a psychologist who was studying power poses. Do you know what power poses are?
I'm assuming it's like some kind of posture, like, you know how you stand up confidently and then that's meant to give you confidence.
So pretty much imagine a superhero standing on their cloud or something, and they're just got their like chest out and they're like do. So that's a power pose, and that's something that is incredibly helpful, and it's such a quick thing that you can do when you're starting to feel a little bit low in confidence.
It's like fake it till you make
exactly when you start to open up your body, and when you start to put your arms on your hips and you start to kind of lift your head up and start to make eye contact.
I'd love you to do a little demo. Okay. Cat, can you please stand up and be Superman? Okay.
This is like a superhero. It's like,
love it. Very powerful.
Fabulous.
Much powerful. Very pose.
Thank you.
This is where my big shoulders come into it. I feel so powerful when I do this. And that's so true. When you're in a really confident, powerful pose, that can also see a decrease in cortisol and an increase in risk-taking behavior. So you literally become a man for 2 minutes.
Amazing.
So if you have a business meeting or you got a first date, really practice those poses, because that can absolutely help the way that your brain sees you. It starts to see you as confident. And I think that's really such something that really isn't well talked about, but I have found it so powerful with so many of my clients.
It's something simple and you can change it immediately.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a second.
You can do it in the mirror.
Yeah.
If you're a bit worried, start to bring your shoulders back, start to stand up straight, and just have little things you can say to yourself, like, I got this. This is going to be fine. I'm strong. I got this.
Affirmations are great.
Affirmations. Yeah. Okay, I have two more to go, but this one's kind of cool too. The psychology of fashion. It's a thing and it's fabulous. So there was a professor who studied the types of clothing and how this can impact on your self-confidence. Ames, when you're in like a boss outfit, especially when you go to work, I feel like work has those real power outfits and the more corporate outfits. How do you feel when you're in those?
It definitely does increase your confidence and how you feel about yourself when you're wearing clothes you look good in, you feel good. And I think comfortability is also a thing. So being in a really boss, powerful outfit, but also feeling comfortable. Like, sure. I know when I wear things that maybe don't flatter
or
just, it could be a boss outfit, but if I don't feel comfortable, if I feel like it's, you know, doesn't feel good, then I don't feel as great. But yeah, totally.
Absolutely. And I notice when I've got really important meetings, I will wear something that is really makes me feel really confident. So it's like a blazer or things like that. It's almost like my armor. It's like, okay, I've got to go in. I'm probably going to get roasted for this. So I know if I wear something fabulous and I immediately feel more confident, and if I spend the time to make myself look how I like it, that it's a really good increase in confidence. Whereas if you go into work, God, I do this all the time, homeless chic, and I'm like, oh shit, like, what am I going to wear? Oh, this is okay. I'll just wear that. It's always on a Friday when I haven't done the washing and I'm wearing something that's a little bit daggy or just doesn't make me feel good. It actually impacts confidence. I know that happens for a lot of people as well.
I think productivity as well. When I'm wearing really good work clothes, I feel like I'm more productive because I'm in that like work zone.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm wearing, you know, daggier clothes and I feel sloppy. I'm more sloppy with work.
I work from home and I find it really helpful. I mean, I don't like fully get dressed up to work from home, but I do start to kind of wear more everyday clothes and not stay in my jammies because I'm associating with bed and I'm associating with sleep and laziness. So really good if you work from home to get out of those clothes. And one more I've got. The power of small wins. Any accomplishment, no matter how small, activates dopamine and the reward circuitry of our brains. When this pathway is open, chemicals are released that gives us the feeling of achievement and pride. So this can be anything. I feel like with someone who isn't confident in their body or isn't, you know, really happy with themselves, just looking at the small wins, celebrating those small wins. So if there goes 10 minutes where you didn't think a bad thing about yourself, that is awesome. That is amazing. If you walked into a shopping center and you didn't have a panic attack, wow, that's awesome. If you went to the beach and you didn't, you know, feel any kind of failure, or if you didn't feel gross or you didn't feel different, that is a win. So really, really stripping back and going back to those small wins, that's going to make you feel good too. And yeah, working on that progress of making it longer. So if you had an hour where you didn't say, have a negative thought about yourself, next time try and see if you can do 2 hours and then 3 hours. I think that's really, really important. And people are competitive, so clients love to do this.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's really helpful.
Amazing. Thank you, Katniss. I think when it comes to overcoming bad body image days and accepting yourself, one thing that can be really helpful to put things into perspective is we can't get back those years and hours we spent obsessing over our weight and consuming too many calories. And I think it's important to understand your relationship with your body is just like any other relationship. It requires work on bad days and in trying times. And it's realizing that we don't need to obtain perfection because we're good enough already. Mm. Like Kat said, imagine celebrating your achievements, your morals, your values, your other relationships, and the meaningful memories you share over good food and company. Mm. Like, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's what we should be spending our time focusing Absolutely. On rather than, you know, hating ourselves.
Yeah.
So I think when we can, you know, after we practice all these strategies that are amazing for helping us achieve increasing body acceptance, it's shifting our perspective as well. And I think, like I said before, it can be really empowering to think of, you know, even just 5 things you love about your body for how it functions, not for how it looks. Our bodies do so many amazing things for us, and I find it so empowering to think about all the amazing things your body can do for you when you really care for it and when you foster a good relationship with your body.
Absolutely. And going back to, what are you proud of? What are your accomplishments? What are your achievements? Could you have done that without your body? Could you have done that without your, quote, imperfect body? Probably not. You literally need your body for everything. You need your brain, you need your legs, you need your arms, you need all of those things. So your body is perfect. The messages you received were incorrect, and you are so worthy of love regardless of your body, regardless of your culture, your race, your skin, your height, your shoe size. You're worthy. So in today's Fast and the Curious, we are hanging on to the body positivity theme, and we are talking about whether body positivity is a scam. Amy, tell me your thoughts. You've popped this in our show notes, and I want to know, why are we talking about body positivity and why do you think it might be a scam?
Okay, because although I love the idea of body positivity and I think it's a great, you know, like I said, cusp on the edge of moving towards body acceptance, I feel like brands are latching onto this whole body positivity movement and, you know, are kind of turning coins out of activism here. It's kind of like capitalism is really, you know, coming in hot with the whole body positivity movement. And I think it loses sight on what the message is and becomes a way of marketing for businesses to kind of...
Yeah, their bottom dollar is obviously something that they have thought long and hard about. All businesses are. At the end of the day, the bottom dollar is the thing that drives sales and drives promotions and marketing. And I think that while it's wonderful that body positivity ads are coming out and they're using, quote, plus size models, or they're using normal, quote, normal bodies, I think certainly there is a lot of other things at play here. And I think they're trying to drive this narrative that, oh, you know, we are embracing all bodies and we are amazing, but they're also subconsciously saying, buy our product. It looks good for the brand. Like, I mean, if you see a brand, like, you know, when Dove did
they're
those
embracing bodies.
Wow. That's so awesome. I want to buy from them. Like, it really becomes,
it's very clever, isn't it?
It is very clever. And something I have a gripe with those companies, such as clothing companies and Dove, when they did that, wonderful, great, love that. But at the same time, it's like, you guys were the ones that sent us these messages in the first place. Like, of course you should be, you know, kind of tracking back and kind of fixing some messages that you were giving out a lot. Like, you were saturating our feed with these beautiful models and airbrush models. So I think that they do have responsibility to start to use normal bodies.
Yeah, like, why are they being praised for doing something that is correcting.
Exactly. Or they should have done in the first place. Mm. Yeah, I think that's really interesting.
And you brought up a really good point off mic. They're not using everyday normal people. They're still using
quite
models
beautiful that models. Have
been, you know,
beautiful makeup, beautiful done, hair.
Yeah. It's not like they've, you know,
gotten someone off the street.
Off the street and been like, okay, we're gonna start marketing towards the everyday person.
Yeah, no.
As you or I would be walking around in clothes. Mm. It's still curated
exactly
to be this.
There's
you know,
still angles.
Yeah.
There's still beautiful makeup. There's
because
still beautiful
at the
clothes.
End of the day, if it was everyday, realistic, average Joe Blow, we wouldn't be like, oh, I want to buy that.
Exactly.
It's still about, at the end of the day, it's still about making money,
yeah,
not about moving towards body acceptance.
Yeah. And I was saying to Ames as well, even when I see these beautiful plus size models or these women who maybe don't have the, have got a different body type to what we've been taught to accept, they still are very beautiful and they still have beautiful hair and they've got probably have a really nice house and a really nice car. So even though, you know, their body is more, I guess, more normal and more like what should be out there, it's just shifting. Like for me personally, it shifts my focus on to be like, oh crap, like now they have those really awesome jeans or now they've got an awesome car. Like I'm still jealous. It's just my jealousy has gone from the body to something else that they have. So yeah, I think it's an interesting power play here with the body positivity movement. I don't think it's completely innocent, but I think that there is some good things coming out of it. And I think that I'm certainly seeing a lot of clothing stores now who predominantly used to use and historically only used really skinny models
they
with the boobs.
The Victoria's Secret show.
Yeah. Yeah. There is still certainly a long way to go, but it's not completely innocent when you see a company doing it's that. Not. They obviously have a bottom line that they're trying to meet. So just be really wary of that. And those companies are probably the ones that sent you those messages in the first place that you weren't good enough. So just.
Right. Moving along to our Q&A. Is it possible to diet/eat less and not get an eating disorder?
This is indeed a tricky one.
I love this question because I think it is really, really important to know the difference between being in a healthy kind of a health conscious state where you're working towards a goal that is maintainable and achievable versus being in a really restrictive, unhealthy relationship with food. So I think yes, it is possible to diet and eat less in order to achieve a goal, but the emphasis should be on nutrition and the emphasis should be on a healthy, maintainable approach, not restrictions. So don't give yourself food rules because this creates disordered eating habits or can create disordered eating habits. And I think the safest and best way to do this is to seek advice from a dietitian for a personalized plan based on your individual goals. And if cost is an issue, you can work out your BMI and maintenance calories just by Googling. You can get kind of a rough idea. If you Google BMI, it kind of gives you all the information and you can just reduce from maintenance down into a caloric deficit and that will kind of give you a little thing to
but
go
not
off.
Too much. I feel like people have
that's
that
what I mean,
real
like a tiny little
urgency
bit
to be like, oh my God, I need to lose 10 kilos, so I'm going to eat 500 calories a day. That's not going to work.
No.
So really being really, really, what's the word? Really modest with how you approach this and
mindful.
Really mindful, because the more that you restrict, the more easier it is to get caught into those real automatic negative thoughts and those real disordered eating habits.
And I think what's important to hear is if you have previously struggled with an eating disorder or if you have previously had an unhealthy relationship with food or exercise, I would address that first.
Yeah, I would not recommend going on a diet. I think that is very triggering and very, very slippery slope, easy to get back into those disordered eating habits. I think if you are someone who's not experienced an eating disorder or have had really any disordered eating, I think you certainly can do this. But I think from a like a psych perspective, if this was a client, I would certainly be really mindful and monitoring of how your disordered eating and could – and I guess what would follow – like what thoughts would you have if you accidentally binged or if you ate something that wasn't appropriate. That would be a really good marker for me to see how you are responding to slip-ups, because I think if it was someone and they said, oh, look, that's life, that's fine, I'll just move on with it, great, then I think that that's a very healthy attitude.
Well, I think the idea for this to be done healthy is to incorporate or to have a diet. And when I say diet, I don't mean going on a diet. I mean the foods that you eat. So to have a diet that you can maintain as part of a lifestyle is the best way, best practice into how you can achieve weight loss without developing any distorted eating or a bad relationship with food. Even things like switching out, you know, higher calorie things. So say you really love Ben & Jerry's, you might switch out Ben & Jerry's for Halo Top ice cream. Mm. It's just a more, you know, a less calorie thing, but you're still enjoying food. So that's something that you could do if you have an already normal, healthy relationship with food and you're just trying to, I guess,
depends why they're doing it. I would go back to the why. Why is it that you want to diet or eat less? Is it purely for weight loss because you think that you'll look better? Is it for a health reason? I mean, I think it was purely for having those expectations would be really helpful to know. Obviously, we don't know much about this question. It's just been...
But yeah, it's possible.
It's possible. But I think if it's this, you know, that you want to look better for somebody else or you want someone to notice you or you want to be more attractive because you think you're not attractive... I think that for me would be a bit of an alarm bell as a clinician because I would go back to, well, why don't you think that you currently are? Whereas if it's purely for health, then I think that that's fine. But as I said, as Ames said, yeah, getting a nutritionist or dietitian on board would be super helpful. We're not, we're kind of the mental health side of things. But I would certainly approach this with caution. I think most people have experienced disordered eating behaviors and it's very easy to get triggered and to fall into that trap. Because it's a really hard thing to get out of disordered eating behaviors. So be really, really mindful. And if you think that you do need some support, make sure that as well as getting a dietitian or nutritionist, just having a therapist to check in with to make sure that your, you know, your disordered eating behaviors and thoughts are kept in check and someone's monitoring that as well. Or even telling a trusted friend or family member if you're having those thoughts. I think that's really important to notice. But yeah, this isn't... We don't know your whole story, so it's individualized. It's just general advice, but certainly seek that out, professional help beforehand, before you start a crazy diet. Guys, that is all the time we have for today. It was a bit of a long one, but it's something that Ames and I are so incredibly passionate about, if you can't tell. Thank you so much for tuning in, guys. If you liked this episode, we would also really recommend that we just pop one up about binge eating. Ames and I did one about mood foods and the impact of food on your mood and the impact of exercise on your mental health. They are in season one. Go back and check them out because I think they'd be really fabulous for you guys to listen to if you like this one. Amy, I hope you have a lovely week and I hope you don't get chased by geese again.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, guys, we will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If you want to see more, please feel free to follow us on Instagram at The Psychology Sisters. To make sure that you never miss another episode, please hit the subscribe button in the podcast app. If you know someone who might enjoy this episode, we would love you to share this with them. Please note the content shared in this episode is purely educational and does not replace personalized advice from a mental health professional. See you next week for more spicy science and sexy self-help.